Welcome to the apologetics.com radio show. My name is Harry Edwards. I'm your host for this evening. And tonight we are live. This is not pre-recorded. And I've got my two best friends in ministry with me here in the studio. Lenny, how are you doing?
Yeah. It's a busy point in ministry, of course, but things are going pretty well.
How's mention a little? Maybe most of our listeners know you run a ministry, an apologetics ministry. Tell what's going on there.
Yeah, comereason.org. It comes from Isaiah 118. Come, let us reason together, and we've done that ever since 1996. So I've been doing a lot of speaking and some writing. I'm working on a couple of different projects right now. I hope to be reaching up to the Pacific Northwest to do an event in August, and also one in Toronto. Planning Footsteps of the Apostles tour next year to take a group through Greece and Turkey and Israel, or Greece and Turkey and Italy for that. And lots of different, obviously as the culture becomes more and more unhinged, I'm getting more and more people who are just desperate to understand what's going on and how their family can be rescued from a lot of the influences that they're seeing, which I think we'll talk about a lot tonight.
Yes, for sure. How about you, Jacob? How are you doing, and how is the ministry that you're running?
Doing well, Harry, and it's good to be here again. Grateful for what God is, how God is using the ministry. It's called Heritage Council, heritagecouncil.org. That's the website. So it's a missions project. Let me now shock our audience a little bit that mentioning that my wife and I, we are missionaries here from India under a missions organization called Missionary Gospel Fellowship. And the task is to basically advance the transforming truth of Christian faith and promote its excellence in public life. These days, what I'm doing is actually reaching out to people in church to help them understand that how the Western world is adopting ideas that are very much akin to how things work out in the Eastern world. So I say this quite often, that the West is becoming Hindu.
Yeah.
Well, it has already become Hindu in many ways, or pantheistic in its public behavior, in its thinking, and how it functions. So it's going well. I'm grateful for all the opportunities. There are some speaking engagements coming up that I'm looking forward to. And it's always good to be here in the studio as well.
Yes, I love it. I think we're doing good work here. We are dedicated to cultural apologetics, and you guys know my heart in this. I feel like this is where just the field of apologetics needs to focus on at this at this point in history.
Yes, and I think it's one of those things that the churches should have taken on maybe two decades ago, task,
Yes. Or,
I mean, we should always be doing cultural apologetics, but I think the intensity in which the way culture has moved in terms of people understanding things, not just in terms of the ideas in modernity, but even the ideas of that carries forward through that into postmodernity and how things are working out in culture. I think we should have been preparing the church, but still not late. I think we should be helping the church to do proper cultural exegesis and engaging with the culture that God has entrusted us with.
Right. And like the saying goes, better late than never, right? But you're right. It's really never late. And our task here for tonight is to help the church to awaken them, if I can borrow that language, to make truly genuinely woke, right, in a real sense, to wake them up into the reality of where we are, because as we're going to be talking in a few minutes, some of the adherents of the topic we're going to be talking about deny reality, pretty much.
Yeah.
It becomes just all about feeling. And I'm not being pejorative or treating that lightly. It really is. We're really at this point where feelings will adjudicate what's good for you. Common sense out the window, logic out the window, reasoning out the window. But anyways, before we get into our topic tonight, I'd like to just remind our listeners that we are supported entirely by your generous donations. And if you find our shows valuable and wish to see it continue, please support us by liking us and sharing the show on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and other social media outlets. You can also help us with our radio costs by going to our website, www.apologetics.com, and click on the donate button. And any amount helps, and your partnership will help us remain on the air and to continue to be effective in the field of apologetics, or specifically cultural apologetics. So, all right, we want to get into our topic tonight. It is now chapter 10 of the book by Carl Truman, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, Cultural Amnesia, Expressive Individualism, and the Road to Sexual Revolution. I think the past few shows, we have sort of paved the way to this road to sexual revolution. I think it's, and we're sort of landing the plane now. You know, we're chapter 10, which is the last chapter of the book. So this is finally the end of this book. I would still recommend that you get a copy of it and read it. I know we've thoroughly enjoyed it. We recommend it. I think Carl Truman does an excellent job of giving us an idea of where we're going, where we've come from, and kind of like the ideas that have supported this. The issue with all of this, which makes it dangerous, is it's not so much that you have to think about these things. It's just so much a part of our cultural experience, you know? And when I say that, it's like a fish doesn't know that it's in water type of a thing. So the LGBTQ plus, that's just part of life now here in the West. We don't even think it's bizarre to mention those, right? It's not weird anymore to find role models as part of that community.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, we want to talk about that. So we are actually now, we want to talk about the transgender ideology. How has that become mainstream? Now, chapter 10 of this book, and Carl Truman says it himself, it's not so much a definition of transgenderism or the pros and cons or an apologetic against it. It's not so much that. He wants us to understand how that's become normalized. Now, of course, in this show tonight, we want to talk about some of the challenges, and there are definitely heavy, grave challenges if the church doesn't address this. So I want to do this. Why is this ideology particularly harmful to individuals and society? And maybe for our listeners, maybe this is just a Western phenomenon, and maybe some of our listeners who are listening in Asia or just not in the West might not know what's going on with the whole transgender ideology. Maybe one of you guys could define what that is, and why is it particularly harmful to individuals and society today?
Well, I think it's the ultimate example, and you're right. Truman is not targeting transgenderism itself as the problem. He's saying it is a significant symptom of a larger problem in the fact, you know, the modern self is now defining itself solely in a psychologically individualistic understanding. So when we talk about the big questions, one of the big questions, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here, right? These are the big issues. And what our modern society would say is the meaning of life is for me to feel psychologically happy, at peace with myself. And I do that by changing my reality to conform to whatever my psychology is at any given point in time. Now, when you start changing your reality, you obviously are inflicting those changes upon others, because if reality is real, then you have multiple people interacting with each other. And the problem, of course, then becomes is when you have different psychologies coming together, who wins? Which point is the one that is going to trump the other? So we see this all the time with, again, transgenders is a good example, where you have somebody in a male in a woman's locker room. And there's psychological stress on both sides, right? We talked about, before the show, we talked about Riley Gaines and Leah Thomas,
yeah.
Who were the swimmers, and Leah Thomas is transsexual, who just absolutely dominated because of the, 30% larger body mass and all of this other stuff. But there was, I guess, a teammate who was in the room as well who had suffered some sexual trauma.
Yes.
And now you've got two competing psychologies, and who gets to choose?
Right.
And that's, you see where this problem is. And of course, then it leads to more physically challenging issues, like trans people claiming to be transgender so they can get into women's prisons, and they start to impregnate two different inmates through rape and things like that, and it becomes a huge mess, because psychology can't give you an external referent and to adjudicate. It just doesn't exist.
I would touch on this idea of this ideology or these ideas, how it has always existed. I can speak from the Eastern perspective. It has always existed as an exception, as something being tolerated, but not as something being the norm.
Yes.
So
you're saying even in a society that accepts this, it's not even the norm.
Exactly.
Right? It's definitely not lived. It's not lived out.
It's not.
Yeah.
And it's seen to be peculiar, right? But at the same time, we need to be seeing that much of the influence that we are seeing today is because of the force that's been applied from outside, from the Western world, through the means of media, through the means of aids, financial aids, through the means of political influence and things like that. So it's not that it's not existing, but it's not been the norm. It is still not the norm. Look at Africa, how they are opposing this ideology, even standing against, even within the church. Look at what's happening with Church of England.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge fraction because it doesn't conform to the local sentiments of the people and what they believe and how they conduct their life. So it's more of an imposition rather than one being people's own understanding of it.
And imagine if this was something other than sexual. So imagine, take kleptomania, for example. Okay, here's a psychological malady that has people who have covetousness, right? It's material rather than sexual. But still the desire's there. So if we were in a kleptomaniac expressive society, does that mean we just throw open all the store doors and let everybody grab what they want? Is, you know, because that's the parallel.
It that's just, what follows, exactly.
And also we need to understand that there is a underpinning reality of the pantheistic worldview that informs these ideologies. So we need to be understanding that the Eastern world is more cyclical. So it allows for these things because of the fact that these are not in some sense a product of sin, that as Christians we would see history as linear. Ideas have consequences, right? Our faith has consequences in every aspect of our life, including when and how we understand gender. So much of the reforms that we have seen in the Eastern world in the matters of what is marriage, what is the role, what are gender roles, all those things were impacted by the Christian influence. It brought about order with this idea of history being linear, not cyclical, right? But even in that, in a cyclical mindset or framework, it has never been seen as a norm, never been seen as something that has to be permitted because it could be one of the ways, right?
Yeah.
A normal ways to live life.
Tell me about the hijras in India.
So hijras now... hijras are basically the third sex.
That's how they build themselves.
Those are called hijras. They are not. It's a medical condition.
Okay.
Right. It's not that a man is identifying as a woman. That does happen in many cases, and when that is found out, the actual hijras, they actually condemn them and take action against those men who actually try out to be hijras. Right?
That's so, not the way you would hear it from the West.
No. There's a difference between transgender men.
So it would be what we would call maybe intersex?
Intersex.
Right.
Yeah. Hermaphrodites, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more of a medical condition than, or biological condition, not medical condition, but biological condition than being a psychological condition.
Right.
So well, there, even there, they have a choice.
Yeah.
They could either be a man or be a woman.
Yeah. Not both.
Not both.
Right. And we acknowledge that that's a medical malady. You know, it's something wrong to be fixed. And it gets fixed after, you know, birth anyways.
Yeah. Even when that condition is being resolved or some resolution is being found, you work with the binary.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You're not removing the binary between male and female, but you're working with that and then making a decision. And we need to accept the fact that sometimes a person who has that condition would lean towards an opposite gender to what was assigned to them at the birth. That does happen, but that's an accident.
Mm.
That's not something being done intentionally. Yeah. That's not something being done on the basis of a choice that one chooses on the basis of their psychological self.
Yeah. Now, I know the proponents of the transgender movement, they would always point to the whole intersex thing as an example of something that is normal, but it's actually not normal. It's really rare.
It's very rare. And just because it happens doesn't mean it should be A, lauded, B, chased after, or C, justified. I mean, there are individuals who are born with six fingers on their hand, but you don't say that human beings are
therefore
six
now
fingered.
Should have 11 right
fingers. It doesn't follow. It's what obviously the human beings as a species requires procreation, otherwise you die out, and procreation requires male and female interchange. It's just the way it works.
Now, honest question, because I'm not sure, maybe you guys know, but for an individual born with, you know, two sets of genitalia.
Not actually quite accurate. Okay. I mean,
even there, it is very clear as to which is more prominent.
Chromosomally, you can.
Is that how they determine it, through the chromosomes?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you have a Y chromosome, you're male.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's XXY or XYY, if there's a Y chromosome present, you're considered male. Yeah, if there's no Y chromosome, you're not. Right. Now, again,
and that's how in your cells anyway.
Right. How those get expressed, that can go awry. Just like thalidomide babies didn't have arms or legs, or, you know, they had those severe birth defects. Humans have arms and legs. You don't say, well, there's the, you know, armless humans. Therefore, if a person with body integration disorder wants to cut his arms off, we should let them do it. That's a specious argument. Yeah. So.
Okay, well, I just want to let our listeners know, if you want to give us a call and chime in, or you have a question on transgenderism or the transgender movement or anything related to that, give us a call, 888-995-KKLA. Again, that is 888-995-5552. We are talking about the T in the LGBTQ+. I still remember, by the way, guys, how it was just LGB at one point, LGB, and then it became T, and then they added Q.
Then there was I-A-A-I.
It started
going so, we'll just abbreviate it as plus.
S plus, exactly.
It became so. Yeah, because they the I was for intersexed, and then there was another Q for questioning, and then there was
two Qs affirming.
And there was like 20 letters at one point. it became ridiculous. Yeah,
kind of like the pronouns right now.
Yeah.
It's just they're not even real words nowadays. It's really bizarre. But again, like what I said in the beginning, it truly is bizarre. That's the word to describe our culture today in terms of how we talk about gender and sexuality. Thaddeus is a Thaddeus Williams, who's a professor at Biola University. I just wanted to highlight his Facebook post because there's like over 200 plus comments. So there's some really, you know, long comments. And I appreciate Thad because he's entertaining a lot of these folks with different ideas, and he's patient. And I jumped in, I chimed in, you too, Jacob. But there's two women there who really, at the end of the day, they're actually saying that we can't know reality. It boils down to that. But what's interesting, but they're trying to argue for their own reality. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. They will dismiss you as saying, well, we don't know. We can't get to reality. But somehow they're trying to persuade you that there is one, which is theirs.
Yeah.
So that's... tell me, Jacob, how is that part of the Eastern mindset, you know, how reality is an illusion?
I mentioned about, you know, the whole understanding of human history being cyclical. When that happens, you have to then allow for variances in terms of your experiences. You have to allow for not just one reality, and you are part of this ultimate reality, right? So the burden is upon you to create your own reality. And when that happens, so you end up basically making this reality because you live in ignorance. You're living in ignorance. You have to attain that enlightenment to become that part of ultimate reality. And when that doesn't happen, it creates a lot of confusion and frustration. So it's up to you to actually shun this illusory world that you live in to attain that oneness with the ultimate reality.
Have people actually attained that ultimate reality or have been truly enlightened? Do you know?
So that's questionable, right? What do you mean by enlightenment?
Right.
So from a Buddhist and from a Hindu perspective, the term is used moksha. It's basically the idea that you have to shun all desires. Now the question is, what do you do with that desire to shun all your desires?
Right, right. That in itself is a desire.
So at the end, what happens, you not only lose your relationships, not only lose your clothes, even food, even words. At the end, you have all that you can do is stay silent and live your life, right? You accept death. So enlightenment in true sense would be accepting death and being dissolved with the ultimate reality. Whereas in the case of these ladies that we're talking about, though they are claiming that the reality is, they can't approach reality or understand reality, though from their own action, they're denying or contradicting themselves.
That's right.
All that they can do is stay silent.
Right.
Not engage with the opposite view.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what they should be doing, but that's not what they're doing. Yeah. And in so doing, they're contradicting their own understanding of what reality is.
So for our listeners, if you ever get engaged in one of these, this is what I call a blind man's bluff. And I've had this happen. I talked with an atheist girl on the campus of Berkeley who said that she didn't believe in, there were no absolute right and wrong. Right and wrong was just to anyone's personal viewpoint, personal opinion, and if somebody sincerely believed something is right, then it's right for them. And I said, wait a minute, you know, your sister's standing here. Are you telling me if one of these homeless guys ran up and was schizophrenic, started raping your sister, you would just say, okay, that's right for him? And she literally said, well, yeah, I think it might be right for him. Now, her sister wasn't keen on that answer, right? She backed off a couple of steps. And I looked the girl right in the eye after, this is after some discourse, I looked her in the eye and said, you know what, you're lying to me right now. What you're doing is you're making up an answer that you try to be consistent with in order to win the argument. But if this is real life, if there's a real person, you're going to be screaming your head off, calling for the police. Because the real world breaks from your intellectual attachments. I mean, these women still want to eat. Food is real to them, right? They still want to be paid for the work that they do. And sometimes you just got to call them on it. Sometimes you just got to say, you know, you're not telling the truth, and here's how I know.
In the next half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Dylan Mulvaney and the Budweiser fiasco. I thought that was interesting. I was mentioning to you guys that it kind of gave me a little bit of hope that people of common sense decided to just not support it, to, and it's somehow working. It's getting their attention, right, that boycott. I also want to mention how dangerous ideas, if one tries to live it out, really has a lot of absurdities. So one would be in women's sports, you know, it's pretty much going to be the end of women's sports. I can't imagine women competing against men in the MMA or track and field or tennis. I know about tennis because McEnroe was really eviscerated for his comments about how even the 100th ranked guy could beat Serena Williams. And Serena Williams is the best female tennis player. And by the way, she does call herself the best female tennis player, you know, not just tennis player, because it's got to be qualified. Anyways, I hear the music, and we will be right back after a few messages.
Yes. All right, let's get back to the Apologetics.com radio show.
All right, well, welcome back to the Apologetics.com radio show. My name is Harry Edwards. I am your host for this evening, and I have my special panel with me, my best friends in ministry, Jacob and Lenny. How are you guys doing again?
Good.
Yep. Still good. We are talking about transgenderism, the transgender movement. It's the T in the LGBTQ+. And the title for this is Gender Unplugged, A March Towards Sexual Revolution. And the show is based on Chapter 10 of Carl Truman's book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, where he tries to bring support historically and intellectually, just a genealogy of ideas in the last couple hundred years and where we are right now. All of the ideas that we somehow assumed, even unintentionally, subconsciously, and now they're part of our, I like this German word, Stichlichkeit. I'm sure I messed it up because I'm not German. But it's in Charles Taylor's language, it's our social imaginary. You know, it's stuff that we don't think about, but it's just normal now. And some of these things are good and some of these things are bad. When they're bad, we need to point it out. So again, the whole transgender movement, we talked about how, or the author, Carl Truman, talked about how a lot of these groups weren't really a big thing in and of themselves, you know, like for instance, the homosexuals and the lesbians, they didn't really even find anything in common. Then you add even the transgender movement, the bisexuals, they were sort of their own little enclaves, you know. But what brought them together? What made them a powerful political force that they are today? Could you guys think back to the 60s and the 80s?
Yeah, it was they took a page out of the Frankfurt School, and they became victims. They positioned themselves as victims, primarily starting with the Stonewall riots of 1969 and the homosexual community. They were able to get a little bit of headway by focusing the story as being persecuted, a persecuted minority. Mm-hmm. That really exploded in the 1980s when the AIDS crisis came along, and you had a lot of strong visual imagery, especially on news programs and stuff, of emaciated males who are dying in the hospital. And, you know, a lot of times people, if you see a homeless guy on the street, or, you know, he may have drug addiction, things like that, you still have pity on an individual going through that. And that helped solidify them. At the very same time, there was a concerted effort to push more visible homosexual characters on television screens and in movie theaters and things like that. So they became likable through the entertainment industry and at the same time pitied as a minority who's afflicted through the AIDS process. Now, the lesbians and other sexual groups, the groups who are kind of understand their lives through their sexual actions, wanted to kind of ride those coattails. And right. so they were part of that. They joined themselves to be within that broader framework.
Because the whole, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Thing. Truman yeah. talks about these two things, right? Victimhood yeah. and the other is that finding the common enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was like now they call cisgender, heterosexual, you know, just group. So I think those two things are definitely what brought them together. And I think you brought in a good category of, you know, the Frankfurt School, the whole idea of oppressor and oppressed. And that's what we are seeing even today.
Yeah.
Everything is pitted
everything.
Against, against that. So, that's a good category to think through this.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? Whether you know anything about the Frankfurt School or wokeness or CRT, one has to realize that there is something, maybe it's the spirit of the age, that says... we should be divided, but that's not really what should happen to us. But that's what's happening right now is something, some force out there dividing us into different camps, you know. Hmm. We're polarized as a nation.
And I think that's because we are not united by the common standard.
Yeah,
in all right. this, we should be asking by what standard? You raised an important question in terms of two different, you know, experiences. Who decides which one to go with
right.
or which one is valid right. and which is not. So here it comes, I think, with the whole gender issue. And we were talking about the whole pantheistic worldview. When the ultimate reality is one and you believe that you are part of that ultimate reality, there's no distinction between creation and creator, right. oh. then you have to remove all distinctions, including gender distinctions.
Yeah.
So this is all towards an attempt to basically erase gender itself.
Yeah.
Right now, we have all these gender divisions that we're talking about, but it is leading us to a place where we're going to lose any sort of gender polarity that God established at the very creation itself
right.
as male
and female. If there's no unique... attributes that define a woman or a man, if those things are merely based on psychology and what you feel, then how do you know that what you feel is I feel like a woman, right? It becomes a meaningless term. And it's interesting, even Truman brings this point up in his book, because he talks about in the 2011 edition of Our Body Ourselves, there's a story of a woman who, lesbian couple, where one of them decides that she's transgender, she's going to be a man. And right. she goes through the process, right? Does the surgery, does the hormone replacement, all the whole bit. And the partner now says, well, what does that make me? Does that make me now straight?
And or, it should.
Or does that make me, you know, because if I'm still a lesbian, then I'm denying that my partner is male. I'm actually right. affirming that my partner is female because I'm a lesbian.
That's right.
So here again, you have the two different psychologies in conflict with one another. And I can either deny my partner, or I can deny myself who I am. So I guess I have to deny.
And it's a good example of, you know, ideas do, I mean, what the other person does impacts you.
Yes.
We are all breathing the same air. Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
And one thing I want to touch upon, I think much of the responsibility also lies on the church. What we've done is actually we have understood our differences only in terms of roles. And when we realize in this modern world that roles can be exchanged and roles can be, you know, reversed, then we are confused. So what we should have been doing, and something very valuable that we got through the way of the revelation of the Word of God, is that there is not merely male roles and female roles, but those roles are situated in our masculine nature and our feminine nature, which are objective. So it's more like an acorn. An acorn is not an oak tree. It has the potential to become an oak tree. And similarly, that's how we should be seeing in terms of like a boy is not a man.
Yeah.
A girl is not a woman yet. But they do have that feminine and masculine nature that has to be protected, that has to be, you know,
nurtured.
Empowered, nurtured.
Yeah.
So people who actually feel that kind of dysphoria, what they should be doing is actually they should be aiming towards that original masculine nature or feminine nature that is in relation to their biological reality as well, not against it.
Yeah.
Right? So right. It's not merely psychological in that term. It's also in terms of the very nature that you may go away from, you may deviate from, then you have to reorient yourself towards that very basic nature or what I call mere masculinity or mere femininity.
I find it fascinating that the most visible aspect of this conflict is, say, within the athletic realm, within the collegiate and the high school level competition. And it's a perfect reflection of this because men are competitive. They're sports driven. This is why, you know, Sports Center's audience is dominantly male. When, even though in high school, soccer leagues and things like that, high school sports tend to be fairly equal male to female ratios. Once you hit college, it's not that the women can't play sports. It's that they simply choose not to. It's not as an important part of their continuing life, mm-hmm. whereas men will continue in the same percentages to pursue sports, either for leisure or in a competitive aspect. And why is that? Because it's just how they're wired. It's part of that male nature. And what we're seeing in the transgender issue is, yeah, that sports drive is still there. You're still a man, but you want to do it
in women's sports.
In women's clothing. Exactly. Yeah, against women, so it's easier for you.
Right.
And so here again, you see this issue where the conflict and the internal contradiction rears its head.
In fact, that's just common sense that if you pair a man and a woman in some competitive sport that requires speed, muscle, or strength, whatever, endurance, the man will always win.
We should also be asking, why is it only one directional? Why isn't any woman getting into men's sports and competing there?
Yeah.
Why isn't that happening? That's an important question to be asked.
Sure. In fact, you guys mentioned some of those examples. Let's be specific, like Leah Thomas, who I believe won the NCAA championship. Is he? I'm going to call him he. All right. Is he the latest winner, the champion? I don't know how NCAA works, but I think he is. Right. He might have broken all sorts of women's records, if I'm not mistaken. But and what about a quick search on YouTube? You'll see how apparently there's a male MMA fighting a female.
Fallon Fox is the name of he has since retired, as I understand it, but it made headlines because when he got in the ring with a woman and hit her, literally broke her skull, crushed her, because your bone mass has 20% more density. You have at least 37% more muscle mass. And she said, I've been hit by a lot of well-trained female fighters. This was like being hit by a truck.
Yeah,
I mean, literally nearly killed her physically. And that's, again, part of the problem.
Right. And as Christians, we are not also saying that all because a man is performing or not performing well in a particular sport, right, opposite to their biological sex. That's not the argument. That's just an outcome of a kind of like decision in their life, which is not founded on biblical principle, which is the fact that God has created us male and female.
Yeah, we're just different.
We are different, right? It's the outworking of that difference. That's what we are seeing in these different ways.
And that's true even politically.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, the Los Angeles City Council held a election, and everybody was up in arms because they had 14 seats that were all male. They had 3 open seats, and only one woman was running, and she wasn't likely to win. And everybody's saying, this can't happen. You can't do this. You can't have all men on your city council. Why? Because women bring something unique to it.
Right.
Well, then aren't you tacitly arguing for the fact that there is something specific and unique that women can contribute. And if transgenderism is true, you're denying that same purpose. So you can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
I think women are better when they remain within their jurisdiction and perform there. Likewise, men are better in certain things when they remain within their jurisdiction, right? In terms of their nature, as God has created them to be.
Yeah. So, Lenny, you mentioned some of the catalysts that propelled transgenderism into the spotlight and kind of finding commonality with the other sexual minorities and gaining some kind of clout and influence now. You mentioned the AIDS epidemic, and I just want to circle back to how Christians, because I believe we're complicit in that. There was a period in which many Christian leaders were saying, oh, you know, that's the consequences. You're reaping what you sow. So, yes, of course, you're dying of AIDS, and that's God's punishment on you. In fact, that is true, but we certainly did not show compassion and love and respect. How can we learn from that, and how can we avoid doing that same thing again?
I think we need to use an analogy or a comparable understanding. So I would say, look at the homeless individual. We have the fentanyl crisis going on right now, and people have been severely addicted to it before. We've had heroin addicts. We've had cocaine, methamphetamine, right? And drives a lot of folks to homelessness, drives a lot of people. Now, ultimately, if you're an alcoholic, things like that, you know, you can blame your circumstances, but there are choices that you make to either help solidify that or you know, try to turn against it. And a lot of folks really don't want to even seek help. But over 90% of the rescue missions in this country are still run by Christians, who say that that is still a person who bears God's image, and therefore I still need to make sure that they can eat. I still need to give them some kind of mercy, and I still need to give them the opportunity to grow, to come out of that. And if they resist, there's nothing I can do, but we don't walk by and say, you know, oh, you're reaping what you sow, and you know, kick them all the way down. They're not the Dalits, right? Mm-hmm. They're not that's a hint. That's a karmic concept. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That we just throw them away. No, that's exactly the opposite of what Jesus did. He didn't take the adulterous woman and say, "Well, tough luck on you." He said, "Go and sin no more. I don't condemn you either." And that's the model that we should be following. And I agree. I think a lot of people were a little bit taken aback. Remember, AIDS was first called gay-related immune right. deficiency, GRID, right. Because it was obvious and that it was happening, and there was a lot of, again, high promiscuity, a lot of sexually transmitted diseases, and there was a lot of problems going on with that. But at the same time, there's still people who bear God's image, and we should be reaching out to them.
I think, yeah, it's a balance of both mercy, compassion, and the justice of God.
Right.
When Jesus is saying, go and sin no more, he's also basically, in one sense, asking the question, where is the man? Hmm. You were caught in adultery, right?
Yeah.
They brought you alone. If I have to fulfill the law, where is the man? So he is not discounting in any way the law. He's fulfilling the law.
Absolutely.
At the same time, he is being merciful. And you know, I think that's what we need in any situation like that that deviates from God's morality.
Yeah.
Be it any, you know, sexual or non-sexual.
Well, in the remaining time we have, I do want to circle back and always, you know, like, be introspective. What should a Christian do? What is the proper response in this day and age when we address these transgender issues and challenges? What should we do?
Practically, I would say we need to recapture the metaphysics. We have to land the very nature of what it means to be man, what it means to be woman, as God has created us to be, in that very mere masculinity and mere femininity that I was talking about. And also what we need to be doing is actually we need to provide more confidence to the future generation in terms of this very, you know, matter that we have to, that they need to be seeking their identity not in their, you know, being in certain kind of like, or in their gender, right? But in the fact that they are created by God, in whom they need to be finding that identity ultimately. So that has to happen in our churches, that has to happen in our home. And I think the antidote to all this is, if fathers are fathers, mothers are mothers, if they are strong, I think we can raise up a generation who would want to be like their fathers and mothers and not want to be going after the ways of the culture.
I completely agree with that. I think from the cultural perspective, we really do need to recapture a lot of the metaphysics. But on an individual level, if your daughter has a friend who's struggling with transgenderism, I think you got to define a couple of things first. First of all, gender dysphoria is a real malady that certain individuals face. It's not... True gender dysphoria is something that requires a significant amount of psychological development and understanding and work. There's also what they call rapid onset gender dysphoria, which is more trendy, which is people who just feel awkward about themselves and they've just latched on to this diagnosis because they've watched TikTok videos and they've gotten certain affirmations. This Abigail Schreier does a very good job of explaining this in her book. And we have to approach them a little bit differently and try to tease out, you know, what they're actually saying, what they're actually feeling, and maybe ask them the question, what do you think life is about? Why is there life? And bring them to a realization that life isn't about just feeling good about yourself, that life is bigger than that. And, you know, in our search for happiness, I almost compare it to like being on a roller coaster, you know, and being on a roller coaster is fun. It's great. You get a thrill. That's what happiness is. Joy is something different. Joy is a level of contentment, even when you're suffering in the bad times. And that can't come from your circumstances. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to ride the roller coaster all the time. You don't get anything else done. You want to be able to know that most of the time in life, you're going to face hardship. Life is difficult. And for most of humanity, the problem with the West is we're living in an age of affluence, so much so that we've forgotten how tough it actually is in the real world. And so when we face something, we're like aghast that we actually have a problem we have to overcome. Yeah. No, that's the norm.
Yeah.
We're just lucky enough to live in a time where we can erase a lot of those or have parents who've delivered us through it.
I feel like we're inundated with what they call first world problems, right? So we manufacture
they
other
problems.
They didn't
have the avocado for my toast. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So our threshold for problems are really low. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we need to tease that out and engage. If your son or daughter is doing that, you affirm them, I love you for who you are. And let's not go changing things. You know, you've got plenty of time. Realize that everything doesn't have to happen right now. Let's wait. And I've seen that work. There's many testimonies where parents who have taken a firm stance but not overbearing have worked on that. Now, if your son or daughter is coming home and their best friend is transgender and they're wondering what do I do with that, because this rapid onset gender dysphoria this tends to be socially you know, sticky and a lot of people will grab you sometimes may have to cut off those relationships even though it's difficult, but you have to clearly talk to your kids about who they are in themselves and understand that God doesn't make junk. He made you right, and it's just who you are, and even your search for identity is actually happening through your sex, because again, we're seeing females doing this at a level of 1,100% higher than what we've seen even 10 years ago.
And I think as parents, people need to be aware that they can't assume their kids who have not developed fully spiritually, mentally, physically, to be missionaries in the world.
Yeah.
They are being influenced by you know, other mediums. Sometimes it's through school as well. So they need to be really careful and make decisions where to send them and when to send them and should they be sending them to certain schools. So I think certain steps that parents need to take is that I firmly believe a strong family as the basic unit of authority is the antidote to these things that we are seeing in culture. We got to be strengthening the family as much as we can. Yeah. And I think once that starts, that's going to have influence in the church and from the church in the greater culture as well.
Let me ask you guys a question. So do you think that Christians can partner with other groups to combat this? Like, for instance, I can see how, you know, with certain laws or movements that have something to do with religion, we partner with the religious community.
So like Proposition 8 in California,
right,
several years ago, there were the Mormons.
That's right.
And some Muslim organizations would stand for it, things like that.
Right.
And the most obvious point here is, you know, James on Twitter, Conceptual James is his tag. He's atheist.
Huh.
Peter Boghossian,
okay,
and those guys, they are actually fighting against some of the CRT, some of the transgender.
Like Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
Those guys.
So there are guys who we have fundamental differences with, but politically,
yes,
in order to understand and underscore this, we can at least say, you're right on that point. It doesn't mean that I agree with all of his approaches, even to solve this issue.
Yeah.
And we got to be careful with that too, because just because we agree that it's wrong doesn't mean that our solutions are the
right.
same.
Yeah, I think the idea of co-belligerence,
yeah,
you know, that's applicable. That's how we also worked on
James
the abortion
Lindsay.
Issue. James Lindsay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we found some victory on the issue of abortion as well.
Right.
Making, you know, bringing about, there were a lot of atheists,
yes,
that I found that who were speaking on behalf of the unborn. So I think we have to be present and be faithful with what God has given us in terms of, and what God has given us is valuable. That's what we need to be showing our kids with.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It has done much good in the world. It has brought civilizations to
Again,
a point
how
flourishing.
How do you come out with this? Everybody is equal and deserving of worth. You can't get that in anything other than Christianity.
That's right. So everything points back to Jesus, really. Again, that's
yeah.
what we've been saying. That's for the last 20-something years.
Yes.
It really boils down to who is Jesus and who is Jesus to you.
Yeah.
And I think I would also encourage parents to have righteous affirmation. You know, that is necessary. Not unrighteous affirmation. Affirmation that is based on the law of God, on the wisdom of God. We need to be careful. Just like God affirms Jesus, right? He is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased.
Yeah.
So even in our decisions about these matters, we should be seeking God's pleasure
yeah.
and God's will.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. All right. You've been listening to Apologetics.com Radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. Our hope is that you've learned some aspect about the Christian worldview that strengthens your faith and make you want to learn more. Special thanks to my panel, Jacob and Lenny, and to our behind-the-scenes tech. Special thank you to you, our listeners. Until next time, good night.